Hi everyone, you are listening to Accents. I am Katerina Stoikova and I currently serve as the director of the Kentucky Book Festival. With me is writer David Grice, one of the authors who will join us on October 21st. Hi David, wonderful to talk to you today.
Thank you. I'm glad to speak with you and your listeners.
You are the author of Bogustan, an adventure in diplomatic misunderstanding. What can you tell us about this book?
It's a humorous book. It's meant to be enjoyed. It is about a new diplomat named Rudy Hancock. And Rudy is very naive. In fact, I would say he's clueless. And he is sent to a foreign nation which has emerged from communism. And he has the unenviable task of convincing that nation to accept tons of American nuclear waste into their country. And when he does that, though, he meets all sorts of interesting characters who take advantage of his naivete and his cluelessness to get him involved in corrupt endeavors.
One thing that I love about this book is that it's told with sense of humor. But not only that, it's not a mean or malicious humor. It is the humor, to me, it has some kind of sweetness.
That was what I was trying to do. I was trying to get people to laugh at the human condition, laugh at human flaws and foibles without being terribly judgmental and without doing it in a mean-spirited way. I hope I've accomplished that.
Is this your first book?
It is. This is my first work of fiction. I've published some articles before because I have a legal background, and I've published articles in legal publications. But this is my first work of fiction.
And it is dedicated to your father, who always wanted to write a book.
My father was my greatest literary influence. My father raised me on Pogo Possum and Mark Twain. And I grew up in a household full of teachers. My father was a teacher and he was a storyteller. And my father was actually asked frequently by local schools and civic groups to come and just tell stories, especially stories about small town Kentucky and the characters therein. So he told stories, oftentimes humorous stories that were fact-based, like the time in Madison County, Kentucky, when the circus train wrecked and all the wild animals escaped, that sort of thing, which was true. He may have embellished just a little bit, but anyway, he was actually my biggest literary influence.
Please describe the cover of Bogustan.
Sure. I have a copy here with me. On the cover of Bogustan is a statue of Bogustan. Now, Bogustan is a fictional country, mind you. This is a work of fiction. And while it summarizes, or rather, I should say, it is informed by the experiences I had overseas in primarily Balkan countries. It is a work of fiction. On it is the fictional national hero of Bogustan.
What is the name of the national hero of Bogustan?
The national hero of Bogustan is Gregory the Great, and he has in his hands on the cover a sword in one hand and a chicken in the other, which are the national symbols. The chicken stands for wisdom, and the sword stands for peace.
I love it. I love it. How do you come up with stuff like that, David?
Well, I did not have to really invent very much. I had experiences overseas. I was actually the anti-corruption advisor stationed at the U.S. Embassy. I was the anti-corruption advisor to the Albanian government. I also did work in North Macedonia, in Serbia, in Ukraine, and in Kosovo. And all of it had to do with anti-corruption. And my experience in those cultures and their attitudes toward corruption and my experiences with the government officials over there provided the fodder for the book. It's hard not to write a book that's humorous when you live in a country where you have to walk up 10 steps to get to a wheelchair ramp.
May I read something also, like about the paragraph?
Certainly.
BFC stood for Bogustani Fried Chicken. In an amazing coincidence, BFC used the same color scheme, advertising photos, and script as KFC, and its original motto was Finger Licking Good, which oddly was written on its packaging in English.
Yes. When I was in Albania, there was an Albanian fried chicken, which looked exactly like KFC. There was a restaurant that had golden arches as its symbol, fast food restaurant. When McDonald's complained, they broke the golden arches at the top and called themselves golden columns. There was Hard Rock. Actually, it was the capital of Albania's Tirana. And they had the Tirana Rock Cafe, which looked exactly like a Hard Rock Cafe in the United States. So there were very many, I guess copyright and trademark laws are not too strong in Albania. And there were many institutions like that, which mimicked things that you would see in America.
Coming up with names, can you speak to the process of naming characters, places, etc.?
What I did was I tried to not be too obvious in the nationalities I was referring to. So I tried to use names that perhaps had some Eastern European, or I should say post-communist state connections, but I did not want to be too clear about exactly what, because I wanted Bogustan to have its own culture. Rudy Hancock, who is the main character, the clueless diplomat, who oddly in the end seems to get everything right and appears to some people to be a genius, a diplomatic genius, even though he's clueless. His name I chose because Hancock sounds quintessentially American by virtue of John Hancock's signature on the Declaration of Independence. And Rudy, I thought, sounded frivolous. So I thought Rudy Hancock together meant, to me, frivolous American.
I am curious about your bio. It seems as unspecific as possible. Can you speak to the decision to put a very simple bio? You are quite accomplished. You have had amazing career and quite frankly, amazing life with a lot of worldwide experiences. And I have to say that this is one of the simplest bios I've ever seen in the back of a book.
Yes, well, I'm not too terribly good at self-promotion first, but I have had an interesting career. I was with the U.S. Department of Justice for 30 years. Most of that time was spent as a white-collar crime prosecutor. In other words, I pursued con artists. And I've always been fascinated with con artists. So I prosecuted people who pretended to be doctors who were not doctors, or people who asked for donations to charities that didn't exist, or people who were getting investments in businesses that didn't exist, or doctors who were billing Medicare and Medicaid for services that no one ever provided, or for patients that didn't exist, right? So I spent a lot of time doing that, plus some public corruption work, primarily concerning local officials. And I did that in Louisville for a few years, but mostly in Lexington for 20 years. I spent 6 years in Washington, D.C. doing some specialized work. For example, I helped prosecute a baby food company that was selling in jars that said 100% apple juice, sugar water that had no apple in it, for example, that sort of thing. And I also did policy work in Washington during the Obama administration and was involved very heavily in organizing the training for other prosecutors. Now, at the end of my career, I wanted to do something very different. And so I volunteered to go overseas. And because of my experience in white collar crime and public corruption, the State Department asked to borrow me from the Justice Department and place me at the US Embassy in Albania to advise the Albanian government about how to have a nation which takes the rule of law very seriously. And in Albania, has been a long history of public corruption. of having to pay bribes for even the simplest things, and especially judicial corruption. At one point, I was leading a training session about bribes for judges in Albania, and one of the judges raised his hand. He was an appellate judge, and in front of everybody at the end of my presentation, he said, "I get offered so many things by so many people." He said, "I can't possibly say no to everybody."
I guess I find that funny.
Well, yes, and you would be surprised at what they thought. Here's another incident, which you may choose to edit out if you want to, but I wrote the first ethics code for prosecutors. And I presented it to them and I said, look, if you want to have an effective system, your prosecutors need to have ethics rules. I appeared before a committee and I told them, this is just a draft, you change it in the way you want. And the very first comment was somebody who said, oh, this rule has to be deleted. And I said, which rule is that? And said, number 5. And I said, well, number 5 says you're not supposed to have sex with a defendant while a criminal trial is pending. And I said, I tried not to show my astonishment because I'm a diplomat. I'm supposed to be diplomatic. And I said, what is your objection to that rule? And the man said, you can't control matters of the heart. And I probably should have been fired when I turned to him and said, it's not your heart I'm trying to control.
Wow, that is astonishing and hysterical and terrifying at the same time.
Indeed, you have summed it up very well.
Yeah. So what is more challenging, fighting corruption or writing and publishing a book?
Well, I guess I succeeded at writing and publishing the book. I did not succeed in rooting out corruption in the Balkans. Having me in charge of sending me to root out corruption in places where bribery has been, or I should say, has become entrenched and has permeated the system for hundreds of years. It's part of the culture.
Yeah.
It is like sending someone to bail the Pacific Ocean with a teaspoon.
What do you think is the biggest challenge facing developing nations?
If nations want to develop, they have to be safe for investors. To build industries that employ people, they have to have a workforce which has qualifications that people want to hire. So they have to have legitimate schools taught by legitimate teachers who did not pay for their jobs, who have actual teaching ability. College degrees have to be something you earn rather than something you buy. And most of all, the nation needs to have a functioning judicial system, because no one is going to come and invest in a country where all your investment could disappear overnight because some judge has been bribed to rule against you.
And how does corruption abroad differ from our homegrown corruption here in the USA?
Well, some of it is similar, especially with some government contracting. But in the United States, you don't have to pay a bribe to get all your public services. In many places in the world, you have to pay a bribe to get a driver's license, to get a building permit, to get a military enlistment or to avoid conscription. To get a medical test, you might have to pay a bribe. To get a job in the government, you have to pay a bribe. All levels of government are permeated with corruption in some of these places. It's become a way of life. In the United States, we don't have that petty corruption, but the United States is certainly not free from corruption. In fact, if you ask other people in the world what the least corrupt countries are, they don't mention the United States. And you know why? The most corrupt thing they perceive about the United States is the way we finance political campaigns. The influence of money in political campaigns says to the rest of the world that the United States is not a country free of corruption.
I can see how that could give the perception that the country is for sale.
And in some countries, You don't bribe, you don't offer to pay a bribe, you just bring gratuities. And nothing gets done until you bring a gratuity.
You don't go empty-handed.
That's right. That's right. And I have examples of that in the book. I have one of the characters actually go to obtain a driver's license, and he attempts to obtain his driver's license without paying a bribe.
Would you like to
And
read an excerpt, either that one or something else?
yes, I have an excerpt here where Mateo, who is one of the Bogostani characters, he's a Bogostani national, but he works for the embassy, and he goes to the DMV to try to get his driver's license. Now, to understand this, you have to realize that in many places, it's illegal to ask for a bribe, but it's not illegal to receive one. So what happens is the public official just doesn't do anything until they're paid something. They don't ask, but they don't do anything until they get something. So this is what Mateo runs into. Now, Mateo is talking to a woman behind the counter at the DMV, and there is an old man behind him in line who keeps whispering to Mateo to tell him basically, just go ahead and pay the bribe, okay? So here's the conversation. Mateo was beckoned to the counter by a balding woman who was sweating profusely. Her communist-era house dress was soaked for 3 inches beyond the neckline. There were no pleasantries. Name, name, she said a little too loudly. Mateo stated his name and displayed his national identification card. Without looking at anything, she said, I'm sorry, your approval is not complete. You must come back next week. How do you know that? Mateo asked, already exasperated. Just give her 100 shekels, the old man whispered from behind. Because all of the applications, she said, for people with the last name starting with the letter M have been delayed by processing problems. Mateo responded, but my last name doesn't start with M. My first name starts with M. Yes, she said, but our staff probably misfiled your application based on your first name. Getting your approval now will be difficult. The old man behind him whispered, difficult means it's now 200 shekels you have to pay. Just pay her. Right? Perhaps you could actually look and see if it's ready, said Mateo. No, said the woman. Looking for something that is not ready would serve no purpose. Getting your approval now would be extremely difficult. Just pay her, said the man behind him. Extremely difficult means now you have to pay her 400 shekels. I demand to see your supervisor, Mateo shouted. Good grief, the older man behind him said, no longer feeling the need to whisper. Don't you know it costs 1,000 shekels to bribe a supervisor?
How did you come up with the currency, shekels?
Well, I just tried to just tried to choose something that would be recognized immediately by the reader as money. They don't use shekels in Albania or Serbia or Kosovo or North Macedonia, but I just chose something that would be easily recognized as money.
Has your sense of humor gotten you into trouble?
Yes, at times I have stated things and then hoped that they went over well. I think what's important is that in a book like this, if you skewer everybody, if no one comes out unscathed, and I do, I make fun here of the foreign cultures, but I also make fun of our own State Department and its foibles. I make fun of US politicians in the book. So I spread it around, and I think people can be very forgiving when they know that they're not singled out for humor, but that it's really an attempt to find humor in the human situation in the world. You know, sometimes fiction can tell a truth that fact cannot. And sometimes humor can get to the essence of a problem when it is otherwise difficult to get to the essence of the problem. And humor is also sometimes a way to subtly disguise criticism. Sometimes people can get away with humor because it's humor, but it actually sends a quite an important message sometimes.
It wouldn't be funny if it weren't true, right?
That's right. There has to be, doesn't have to be all true, but there has to be a kernel of truth in it in order for it to be funny.
Have you had any reactions from readers?
Yes, I have had reactions from readers. Some people like the book because it takes a number of separate situations and in the end brings everything together and makes a resolution of all sorts of seemingly intractable problems that could not be resolved. But mostly the positive response I have had comes from people who've either traveled extensively overseas or who have lived overseas. And those people often say it is very funny because the level of miscommunication in the book is similar to what they experienced overseas, and that miscommunications and misunderstandings are frequent, often funny, and somehow seemed ultimately to be resolved.
And what would your father think of the book?
Well, my father is deceased, and I miss him greatly. I think he would greatly appreciate the book because I think he would see it as he saw his stories, which very frequently were entertaining, but there was a subtle, important lesson to learn underneath the story. And I have an important lesson I hope people learn when they finish the book. And that is, I hope they understand the struggle of people, the difficulties of people, the challenges of people who live every day of their lives in society where corruption has permeated the culture. I want people to appreciate that. I want them to understand the types of corruption these people face and how difficult it is to deal with the problem. You know, one of the problems that we have in promoting democracy worldwide is that people sometimes see democracy as corrupt. Do you remember the Arab Spring in the 1990s? Many Arab nations converted dictatorships to democracies. Do you know how many of those countries are still democracies? Zero. Do you know why? The democracies were corrupt, and the people gave up on democracy. Let's try to understand the impact corruption has worldwide and fight it with all we've got.
I have one last question. What is the most important thing you teach your students? If there is one thing you want them to remember from your class, what is it?
I do teach legal writing to my students. So we talk a lot about accuracy. We talk about a lot about research. But this is a work of fiction. And what I would tell them about a work of fiction is that you need other people's eyes on your work. You cannot write a work of fiction totally on your own. It takes other people to see where the gaps are, the inconsistencies are, places you've gone too far, and there were a couple of places I went too far, to look at your work and help you. So while they say writing is a solitary task, you really need some other set of eyes on your work.
Thank you so much, David, for spending time with me today and talking about Bogostan, an adventure in diplomatic misunderstanding.
Thank you very much.